are listening to Wells Tech, episode 644, recorded on Tuesday, December 15th, 2020. Five Below Cables. Wells Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today on the show, we finish up our book review, Atomic Habits by James Clear, talking about the fourth law, make it satisfying. We also are joined by MLC student Michael Tracy to talk about cybersecurity, some interesting stuff that you may want to implement and be concerned about in your church or school. Sally's found the worst passwords of 2020, and I bring to our Picks of the Week segment braided cables. All that and more coming right up. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 644, and we're recording this on Tuesday, December 15th, 2020. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this show about technology and ministry and the intersections of those two. And helping me in the crosswalk, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you today?
I am very good. Can't believe it's 10 days till Christmas already. It's flown by.
Mm-hmm. Heard so. The other day you shipped all your presents off.
That's a good thing since we're doing the distance this Christmas. And yeah, cost me, I think, over $75 to get all those packages in the mail.
Kind of factor that into the cost of the budget. Yeah, exactly. So
COVID Christmas.
Everything else in readiness. You got the. Are you an early decorator, or do you kind of wait till after Thanksgiving, and or not at all?
I actually just barely am decorated and probably would like to do more. But this year has been busy for me because I've been taking a couple of classes. So I wrapped up those classes last week and was able to have some fun times mailing packages and decorating this past weekend. So those are big accomplishments. What about you guys? You all decked out at the Spriggs house?
We got a new tree this year. The last one gave up the ghost. It hit the trash can. So we went out and got a new, a little bit smaller, a little narrow. Or fits a little bit better in the space, so we're a little excited about that. But Debbie's definitely the decorator in chief, so she just kind of directs. And I hate lights with a passion, so anything that is pre-lit and just kind of does its thing, I'm all for. So we're rocking the pre-lit tree, which is kind of nice.
Very good. Well, keep it festive and. You know, it's not about the packages or the decorations. Obviously, we're just rejoicing to be in this season, to be preparing for our Savior's birth and his coming again. So good stuff.
Yeah, it's a little bit different, as always, you know, in our conversations in 2020, you know, what the children's Christmas service is like and what Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and family gatherings and whatnot. But you do what you have to do, and the Lord gives us the good news regardless of our circumstances. So that's the good news part of it. Okay. Another part of good news for our little show is we're going to finish up a book today. And a book we've been reading together is called Atomic Habits from James Clear. And he helps us, I think, focus on some pretty fundamental, and I guess there's nothing much more than common sense, but just kind of packaged nicely for us about how to get rid of bad habits and how to start new habits. So ending this at the end of the year as we begin the new year is kind of great motivation. At least I'm finding opportunities, and especially these last few chapters talk about some things that you can do to kind of keep her going. And that's one of the things with New Year's resolutions is they can quickly fade. And there's some good tips and tricks in these chapters. Specifically, we're on 15 to 17 and then the end matter to help us along the way.
I agree totally, Martin. I was thinking about New Year's goals and things like that as I was reading as well. This chunk is called Make It Satisfying. And For those that have been following along, James has four rules that he outlines in the sections of his book. Let's see, make it obvious, make it attractive, make it easy, and now finally make it satisfying. And by satisfying, we're basically setting ourselves up to continue the habit. So the other three rules were more about establishing and triggering the habit and things like that. This one is more about when you do it, you'll want to redo the habit. You'll want to continue. And so it's pretty logical what he describes, but it kind of clicked a lot of buttons for me that we really like to do the things that give us instant gratification and the things that have a longer sense of satisfaction where we have to wait for it. Mm-hmm. Those aren't as easy to adopt. And so he's saying basically to give yourself a little mini reward as you're doing the things that have this long-term reward built in.
Yeah, a lot more brain talk again in these chapters. And he's kind of resonated with me because, boy, this was me all over the place where the chapter 15 is the cardinal rule of behavior change. And the rule is basically what is immediately rewarded is repeated. What is immediately punished is avoided. So the immediacy of doing or not doing the habit, what you feel or what you get from that is really what you take away. So he kind of gave a couple of examples. He said the brain overestimates the threat of current events. Like when you're on a plane and there's turbulence, you think, well, this isn't good. Maybe the plane's going to crash, right? And then it underestimates the threat of future events. So eating fatty foods and then ultimately heart disease. So it's kind of a catch 22. So delaying gratification is really the key by adding these little bits of gratification right away, kind of rewarding in at least in some little small way, good habits right away. So he talked about exercise. He talks about exercise a lot. I don't know if this was his deal or not, but reward for a good day of exercise wouldn't necessarily be a bowl of ice cream, but maybe a massage, something that is beneficial to you, but still satisfying. So that's going to keep you going rather than you kind of have to project way into the future that if I keep doing this, I'm going to lose those 20 pounds someday. That's not motivation. That's too far away. It's got to be immediate, something that you can, something that's very tangible and something close to the event or the habit being completed.
Then he goes on, Martin, in chapter 16 to talk about how to stick with good habits every day. And the big takeaway for me from this was he was recommending habit tracking. Mm-hmm. I thought it was kind of funny because I've done Weight Watchers a few times and over the years, and that's one of their big things. The people that consistently track all their food intake are the ones who stick with the program. Yep. And lose weight. So, and it's just so easy to get off track. He even mentions in the book that you can miss something once, but if you miss it twice, it starts to become your new habit. And so having that tracker and doing it consistently and not letting yourself slip is probably a big key to successful habits.
Yep. And he has, we'll put a link in the show notes. He has a tracker, kind of a PDF form that you can use. But I use an app, and I think I mentioned this in our last show, the habit tracking app called Streaks on the iPhone, where it's very simple. They're big buttons, and all you have to do is press and hold, and you complete it for the day. So if it's, I have one called run/hike. So if I run or hike during a day, I get to check that one off. And you can kind of set it to how many times a week you want to do this. So it doesn't have to be every day, but I've got mine set for 5 out of 7 days. So if I'm doing this 5 out of any 7 day period, then, you know, it stays green. But then if I miss, so if I only do it 4 out of 7 days, then I kind of go back to zero. So I'm at 24 right now. So that's, I don't know if that's my longest streak. It actually gives you your best. Actually, my best was 75 this year. I think I started this back at the beginning of 2020. And that kind of gives you your last day's history and so on and so forth. So I have one for prayer, one for a verse of the day journal, a few others that it's kind of a neat thing. And then you can set it to remind you or nag you, depending on your preference. But one thing, one point he makes in the book is that you should track it right away. So don't wait till like the end of the day. You know, if you do the run, if you do the hike, if you, you know, whatever it is, as soon as you're done, connect it. So you're kind of habit stacking, you know, that too. So you do the habit and then you record the habit. So just, and some people don't like that kind of micromanagement, I guess, but he's suggesting that that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. And Martin, I see that you made notes here that you like that automated tweet concept. I thought that was pretty funny. And I'm trying to find the reference in the book. But if I remember correctly, somebody wanted to wake up at 6 o'clock, something like that. And that if he didn't disable an automated tweet, it went out that said, I'm not awake. I must be being lazy today. The first five people that respond to this tweet get $5 via PayPal. So he put his money behind his habit tracking.
And there are different programs like that, too, I think. Is it Noom? One of those apps does that too, where you're actually, you get charged for, you know, not making weight or not doing the exercise or whatever. So there's incentive there. I put it in the notes, not because I thought it was a great idea, but because I thought it was an interesting thing to talk about.
It was pretty funny. I read that one to my husband actually. So yeah. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, that if there's not, and yeah, if it's going to cost you $25 to sleep over a minute, yeah, you might be, yeah. And he did qualify it. I think in the tweet it says unless there was some technical difficulty with the alarm or something. So.
Sure.
Next chapter, which is also I thought a very salient one: have an accountability, or how an accountability partner can change everything. So this is the part about partnering with somebody and creating a habit contract, so that there is the sense that you get when somebody's watching, and sometimes that's what you need. So if you are doing this together, or you're asking somebody to hold you accountable, that makes a difference, and that's a powerful motivator to be able to have somebody or give somebody the permission to keep you on track. And I think there's some value in that in a lot of different disciplines, not just in habits, but in other respects as well, in team building and meeting management, those kinds of things. So I thought that was an excellent chapter.
Yeah, I haven't specifically had, you know, I guess more than my husband as an accountability partner for different things, but having someone that's obviously that you respect and that is maybe a little bit more distant than just somebody that's used to you breaking your habits. I don't know. Right. Maybe that would be really helpful. So yep. Interesting yep. Concept.
So how does he close out the book here, Sally?
Yeah, then there's a section about, I want to see, how to go from being merely good to being truly great. So there's a few chapters that he threw in that are just extras beyond the obvious, attractive, easy, and satisfying rules that he gave us. The first of which, chapter 18, says the truth about talent, when genes matter and when they don't. And this has to do with, you know, what's inborn in you as far as your gifts and talents and things, and that definitely sometimes those kind of things come into play. He told an interesting story about some Olympic athletes and mm-hmm. things like that, and how their bodies were designed in a way that made them more fitting for their particular fields. And basically he's saying that if you find the things you're good at and that you enjoy, I guess it's easier to keep your habits and things. It's easier to develop and grow your skills if you know what your gifts are. And from that, he pointed to a webpage that he has about personality tests and different personality tests that are out there that you can take advantage of. I know a couple of others that he didn't specifically mention, Strength Finders and Enneagram, are very popular today, where groups are taking those and learning about each of their teammates' gifts and talents mm-hmm. and things. Yeah. Kind of taking advantage of that.
Chapter 19 was called the Goldilocks Rule, how to stay motivated in life and work. This is a kind of a challenging one, because sometimes we are of a mind to set our sights a little bit too high, and we get easily frustrated and say, well, you know, I can't hit that, or it's just too hard to keep going, you know, in this particular direction. So finding the balance there. And then even if it's, he talks about showing up despite boredom, you know, it's kind of a concept of you've got a long-term goal, but along with these other rules, if you kind of set the rules up, prop the rules up like he's outlined them, even boring type tasks can be rewarded and kind of keep you motivated to go forward.
Mm-hmm. I like the concept of stretching yourself a little bit. So maybe mm-hmm. not everything you do is cutting edge or, you know, really super
right
challenging, but
yeah.
but pushing the envelope a little bit, just manageable difficulty right on the edge. And that keeps things interesting, I think, you know, if you're always yep. learning and doing new things and stuff. So good things to keep in mind.
So chapter 20 was the downside of creating good habits. Sally, what do you think are the downsides?
I guess basically just kind of getting in a rut right. and not being willing to change. So we all know that the world changes around us. And even though we may have the most perfect habit and we carry it out to the greatest extent, sometimes our habits need to change as well. So he kind of left it with everything is impermanent. So there is nothing that's not going to change or whatever. I was struck that God's word is right. changeless. So we have a counter to that concept, but definitely the rest of the things are adiaphora that can, you know, aren't commanded or forbidden in God's word and can be changed over time. So be willing to adapt your habits and make changes where needed.
Yep. Kind of close the book, obviously, with a review and the encouragement to, you know, of continuous improvement. But he talked about small habits don't add up, they compound. And he began the book the same way, where it's not just that you are trying to make little minor improvements and ultimately you're a little bit better in a lot of different areas, but there is compound interest. There is a buildup. And if you stack these up and you build this 1% that he was talking about earlier in the book, it can make a dramatic change over the course of time. That was a good encouragement. So what do you think, Sally, the book itself? 5 stars, 4 stars, 3 stars, where do you rank this one?
I thought it was a really good choice, Martin. I think you had read it prior to this mm-hmm. and brought it to the table. And I think it was very timely. Unfortunately, I've been living this COVID mindset and it's been yes. really, really hard to have good habits when the world's so upside down right now. And so, good motivation, like you said, really good timing to climax it here right before the beginning of the year. And maybe things can move in the right direction in small ways with new habits. So I liked it.
Good. And it's a quick read. It's not a long investment. So I think there are just little nuggets that you can take and just some good things to put into practice. Mm-hmm. Sally, we're going to do another book. We had decided to kind of do a couple short ones. And so this was a one for the fall. Now here as we head into winter and spring, we're going to do a very timely topic called the post-quarantine church. This book just came out, as you can imagine. Tom Rainer is the author. He's written a lot of books about the church and how to look at a church's ministry. And I think this is another short one, but if you'd like to follow along, look for The Post-Quarantine Church by Tom. That's T-H-O-M, Rainer, R-A-I-N-E-R. And he's a very insightful book. It's, again, a quick read. You could read it in the morning. And we're going to take a few chapters at a time and talk about some of the things, the major points in that book that kind of should be top of mind as ministry leaders are thinking about, you know, what does church look like post-quarantine, post-pandemic. So,
good choice, Martin. We probably owe Pastor Peter Hagen a shout out
because
I think
yes.
he pointed us this direction. And so we will look forward to kicking that off in January 2021 ahead of us.
Sally, we were fortunate enough to have a little discussion with Mike Tracy. Mike is a student at Martin Luther College. I've talked to Mike a few times. He's retired military, pursuing a staff ministry degree, but he has in his heart a degree to, or a desire to get the word out about cybersecurity. He recognizes that this is a challenge for our Wells churches and schools. So we thought, yeah, let's just sit down with Mike and talk about what this thing looks like today, and maybe a little peek into the future. So Mike was good enough to do that, gave us some great resources. So let's play that interview now.
Joining us today on Wells Tech is Mike Tracy. Mike is a second career student at Martin Luther College, has a very interesting first career as well, but we'll let him do a little bit of introductions himself. Mike, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. Introductions. So yes, I am currently a second career student at MLC doing staff ministry studies. I actually like to say that this is my third career. Oh. First career was military. I was in the Air Force for 24 years. Did most of my tech learning, technical training through the Air Force, and received my CISSP. That's a Certified Information Systems Security Professional certification. And retired from the Air Force in 2009 and began working for Hewlett Packard Enterprise, which I did 9 years with them, maintaining medical systems for the Department of Defense. So quite a bit of history with technology. Go ahead.
What caused you to think about staff ministry with that varied background?
Well, I've always been the multiple churches. We've always been Wells members, my wife and I, and it just feels comfortable to actually work with people instead of computers.
It does.
Well, people are always part of computers, and you cannot take the person out of that equation.
That's right.
Very good.
And so, yeah, it's really been just fun to be here at MLC and just sit and study God's word. It's awesome.
Any particular area of staff ministry you're interested in?
Length and breadth of staff ministry studies. Assimilation and evangelism. Mm-hmm. I am also studying chaplaincy.
Interesting.
And a lot of that work is, we're talking specialized work in addiction counseling, care for the elderly, and so just that specialized ministries, which has also been just super enjoyable to do. Neat. So
always excited to hear from second and third career students. You bring so much with your own personal background to that. That's exciting and actually fits very well with our show topic today, because you actually reached out to us after attending a recent conference because of concerns around cybersecurity, and especially training young people, students in our schools, about cybersecurity. Maybe tell us a little bit about the state of cybersecurity currently. That maybe is a good starting point. How important is it? What are the risks? That kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, a great, great question. We've come so far in the past 20 years with just moving so much to the interwebs, and our society is so connected, and especially with the COVID, we've sent a lot of our students, most of our students, to the interwebs to be able to do cyber learning, this distance learning. So they're on full time. The attacks to our nation, to our people, has just increased exponentially. The crime, the cyber crime rate that's going on right now, we can expect, trying to find my numbers here. We can expect that the damage that cybercrime is going to have on us is going to be like $6 trillion annually by the end of next year, and the increase we're talking from January, from the first 2 months of this year, there was a 350% increase in phishing attack websites. And for the viewers, of what a phishing attack is it comes in as an email or maybe a link that pops up on Facebook or whatever page you're on that leads you to a website that asks for your information. And it could be as simple as your name, your location, your address, and that's all they need to start the process of stealing your identity. And that's worth so much money to these cyber criminals. It's just having that data.
Are there attacks specifically for our children that are targeted specifically at them? What kinds of things? How would that look different maybe than somebody who is a senior? And because we know that they are, you know, a target as well. How are kids, how are they attacking kids?
Yeah, a good question. Where there's three areas when it comes to our children, there's three areas that we really want to focus on educating them. One is privacy. Okay. Because now we're not talking people that really want money or their identity. They want the children themselves. Mm-hmm. We're talking pedophiles. We're talking, mm-hmm. And it's a very dangerous area to be in. And children don't know, there's so much trust that they have with the people they're communicating on the web. They have no idea who they're communicating with. So to keep their information private, don't give out your name to just anybody. Make sure you know the person and have an established relationship with them, a friend that you go to school with, a parent, anybody beyond that, you don't know who you're talking to. The other two areas are safe posting. When we talk about information that children tend to give out, in fact, adults, when you look at Facebook and you see these fun things that come up like, oh, what Disney princess do you happen to be? And you start answering these surveys and you're just feeding your likes and dislikes, your hobbies to the people that are collecting that data. So they can build a profile of who you are, so they can communicate more with a higher education to you and be able to seduce you easier. The third area is cyberbullying. I mean, it's bad enough that we have in the schools that people get physically abused. But when it comes to cyber abuse, there's this anonymity to the person on the other end. You don't know who is bullying you. And there's just been so much, such a huge increase in that. Cyberbullying is really one of those areas that we've got to watch more closely. And it comes down to really parents need to be engaged in that activity, watching their kids, understanding where they're going on the website, understanding who they're communicating and what they're doing with. Don't leave them alone. You wouldn't leave them alone at a park or in a situation where you know there could be danger. So you don't want to do that online either. So
sounds like it's pointing to a real need for training, I would think, training the children, maybe training faculty staff, maybe training parents as well. do you have recommendations along those lines of training resources?
Absolutely. And that was one of those things that we had learned, like you had mentioned, I was at a conference, the ISC 2 Security Congress, 4,000 cybersecurity warriors at this conference. And one of the big things that came out of it is a site or a group, a nonprofit group called the Center for Cyber Safety and Education. And what they've done is they've partnered with, you know who Garfield is, right? Garfield the cat.
Yeah, a lot of people know. Lasagna lover.
Exactly. Well, they've partnered with the creator of that, and they've created this whole education program around Garfield. It's geared towards third graders, believe it or not. And it is meant for schools, for libraries, and for parents to be able to gain these resources and be able to use them to teach their kids about these things. There is a nonprofit. There is cost to these things. But I'm gonna give you the website to where they can go and get these. There's training for the educators to do this. And it's not something that you're going to have to get a degree or take hours of lessons to be able to bring this to your students. And it's something you can use. The packages that they have for schools are designed for a classroom of 30 students. And this includes cartoon or comic books, paper comic books that the kids can take home, along with trading cards, and just a lot of resources, plus the lesson plans for this. So
it sounds like you're recommending they start pretty early. I mean, third grade is a time where, you know, a lot of these things are focused. As they progress, are there other things that we should be doing as they kind of climb through the grades, get into, you know, upper middle school, high school, et cetera? What kinds of things should we be pointing them to at that point?
Oh, absolutely. And the website, granted that one, the cartoons are geared towards the third graders, but there are other resources with the center.
Oh, okay.
For our teenagers, especially things like, again, like privacy, but we deal with things like loss of data, sexting, where does that information go? And just the training that we can give our youth through their teen years and into high school. And it's all there. The other thing that's there, like you had mentioned, was for senior citizens. When we deal with the spectrum of vulnerabilities, because I think our seniors are at risk as well. They don't know who to trust. And when somebody starts talking to them saying, oh, hey, we just realized that your computer is out of date or there's a virus on your computer, let us come in and help you fix it. Well, they didn't contact this person. This person's just showed up and said, hey, we need to fix this. You can't trust that. And they don't know better to not trust that. So,
right. So I'm guessing this isn't just like a one and done kind of thing. It's a lifetime of learning and a lifetime of effort that should be put into this.
Oh, absolutely. And it's something that you want to keep up with educating people and keep the awareness up for our churches and schools. This is prepackaged information. A lot of these things are free as far as like flyers, especially for the education for the seniors. This is all free items that you can download. And what would be really great is you don't have to bring in a person like myself with the certifications to be able to train these things. If you have maybe a high schooler with a savvy high schooler who is looking for a project on how they can help out in their church or in their community, in their school. Great. They can get this information, and there's training that they can do to be able to present this. And then it's not just for our schools and for our members, but now you can reach out to the community and be able to give this training to your local community as well.
Like, are there technical things?
devices, software packages, subscription services that specifically a school technology director could put in place that would at least help with security on campus there?
It really depends on the campus. It really depends on the school. For the tech savvy person, absolutely. You want to have your firewalls in place mm-hmm. and you want to have your systems locked down. The big thing, two areas that I really emphasize when I'm talking to, when I'm doing interviews with agencies that have asked me to come in and help, inventories of hardware and software. Believe it or not, if you have a device that your teacher uses and you don't know where it's at, your teacher doesn't know where it's at, and you've got personal mm-hmm. data on that, you've lost it. You need to keep an inventory control of everything you have. So hardware wise, you just got to control your stuff. Software as well. For the techie, yeah. Keeping things up to date. Sometimes we don't put our patches on our systems, and you have to. In this day and age, the cyber criminals are very smart, and they're looking for holes in everything all the time. So keep your systems up to date. But I will tell you, 22% of all cyber crime is against the person themselves. It is social engineering. It has nothing to do with software or hardware. Mm-hmm. So keep your people informed. Keep them educated.
So looking to the future, are there things that you learned maybe at your conference or whatever about what's coming next from these cyber criminals?
Well, great question. Yeah, we look at our vehicles today. You look at Tesla and the new vehicles coming out. 90% of the cars out there are going to be connected to the internet. So now you've got this vehicle that you're driving down the road that you let go of the steering wheel and it's driving itself. This is our future, where we are so connected to the internet that our vehicles, our way of life, my washer and dryer are connected to the internet. And so we've got all this trust on the wires. So your entire life becomes knotted in there. So that's really the future, is that everything and anything you have, there's 75 trillion devices connected to the internet, and it's just getting exponentially more and more of the things. All our TVs are connected.
And all those points, all those hosts all those that are points. Out there are potential targets for cyber criminals. So yep. They're going to get more and more sophisticated, I would think, over time.
Absolutely.
So I think your advice applies then, you know, in the future, keeping things up to date. If there are firmware or software updates, you know, make sure that those patches are applied, that you're paying attention, you know how to do it. You stay connected with all those. And really, that's the best that you can do, right? You just have to pay attention, be smart about it. And, you know, even if you're not technically savvy, you have to have some level of comfort with keeping your technology up to date, just like maintaining your car or something like that. Your home, you have to pay attention and know how to maintain it.
Right. And for those folks that are, you know, I don't want to be all doom and gloom here. The internet and our technical resources really do improve our lives. The medical field alone and the technical advantages that we've have in that area are just huge. So I don't want to tell people just to completely disconnect from everything, but you have to be savvy. You have to protect yourself and those around you. So
Very good. I'm just going to do a special shout out to my 90-year-old mom, who I love dearly. This is why we do those iPad updates every time they come out, even though it logs you out and we have to figure out your password. So it's all important. And thanks for taking the time, Mike, to give us more insight into that, and especially to advocate for training in our schools, because I think that's a great point that we want to share with folks.
Awesome.
Yes. And blessings on your study, Mike. Appreciate the dedication. It's not easy to do a second or third career, and the wherever you land, I'm sure your technology skills will be put to good use as well. So we're looking forward to having you serve in full-time ministry at some point. So blessings on that.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate you folks letting me talk.
Mike, thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule. It's been a whirlwind, I'm sure, for him, being a student and trying to wade through 2020 like the rest of us. Great stuff. Great, good resources that he provided, a great perspective, and the passion to get this word out is not lost on us at all. That's a really important topic.
Definitely is. I think it was just yesterday, Martin, that the hacking and leaking of data through some major corporations and everything came out yet again. I mean, we're hearing about this constantly. And obviously, our students, our children are spending a lot more time online and having exposure to that kind of security challenges as well. So we've talked about this in the past, but it had been quite a while. I was really excited to hear this updated perspective from Mike. I will definitely throw the link to the Safe and Secure Online program that he mentioned in the show notes, but we'll also include a few others as well. We've talked about in the past, Common Sense Media has a complete curriculum out there for all grade levels, as well as Google's Be Internet Awesome, which has like this interactive playground area for kids to learn about cybersecurity and digital citizenship, it's often called, at the school level. And then also resources for parents as well as educators on that website. So check out all those great resources, and hopefully they'll be a blessing to you and your ministry and your personal life.
Yeah, thank you so much, Mike, for taking the time with us. Want to jump to our picks of the week. Sally, this is just going to be our last pick of the week for 2020?
I think it is. You better make it good, because next time we're going to pick out our best picks of the year. Okay. So this might be one of them. Who knows?
What are you going to close it with?
Well, mine is a very end of year type article that I came across, the worst passwords of 2020. Again, harkening back to that cybersecurity discussion we just had. The companies out there take a look at different databases that have been compromised during 2020 and calculate password prevalence, basically. What are the most common passwords? How quickly can they be cracked? Using different sophisticated software that does such things. And the number one password, 123456, is used by over 2.5 million users in the database 23 million times, and it can be cracked in less than a second. So don't use 123456, and don't use 123456789 either. That's the second worst password. So interesting list to look over. And just, again, a reminder to use strong passwords, to mix up upper and lower case, include special characters and numbers. Don't make it obvious personal identifying characteristics of yourself, like your birth date. That would be bad to do that, because obviously hackers can try those kind of things and get access. I thought this added component of how quickly it can be cracked just really gives you even more perspective. And of the top ones, there's a few that take 3 hours or so. Some take 2 minutes or 17 minutes. Number 36, chat books, was used and could be cracked in 1 day. So that one was commonly used by 45,000 people. But that one's an example of like two different words being put together. In this case, they were all lowercase, so that makes it even easier. But most of them can be cracked very quickly. So just kind of take heed. Use a password management software. I recommend LastPass. That's what I use. And don't use common passwords. Be careful out there. So.
And obviously the encouragement is if you are in charge of the technology component at your church or school, that this is something that you really just kind of have to hold the line on. You know, you're going to get pushback from your staff, your faculty, whatever, saying, boy, I really don't want to make this any harder than it needs to be. But if you've got tools to enforce password strength and the frequency of changing it, please use those. You just kind of endure the derision, but know that it's for everybody's own good. So, because I'm sure if left to our own devices, many would choose these rather circumspect password selections.
Yep.
Good find, Sally. Thank you. My pick of the week is actually a little hardware pick, and it is a USB cable. Doesn't sound all that exciting, but in general, it's the Anker brand, A-N-K-E-R. Really a big fan of what they produce. They make battery chargers, they make wall chargers, they make speaker phones, and they make really good cables, especially of the braided variety. One of my nitpicks with like Apple products is the cables are super expensive, and they don't hold up real well. You bend them consistently a certain way, and they're toast. So one thing I normally do is replace them right away with like an Anker braided cable, a lot sturdier. They come in different lengths, designer colors, you know, red, gray, green, whatever. Just a nice product. They have all kinds of, you know, USB A to C or C to C, or they have other kinds as well. But and they're not as expensive as the ones that come with, you don't have that Apple tax or things that come with other devices that aren't well made at all. So if you're looking for replacements, I would maybe look to Anker. Just do a quick search. I'll put a link in the show notes to one that you know, I recently purchased, but it's again, you know, they're not super expensive, and I think they last a lot longer. At least that's been my experience. And give it a shot. That's Anker, A-N-K-E-R. Sally, what are you doing for cable these days? Whatever comes
great
with the device?
No, I tend to shop at Five Below for my cables. I like cheap because they break often.
Does everybody go there?
Yeah, that's the tech maven. But yeah.
I suppose you could get five there for the price of one anyplace else, right?
And so, yeah.
I
like longer cables.
I didn't know they sold them there. So.
Yeah, they do. They have quite the selection. But I like longer cables just to give me a little more flexibility in the car or, wherever, just to not have to unplug it necessarily to grab it real quick and make use of it. So that's my preference.
Well, if Five Below is listening, they're going to want to pull that little segment out there to pump up their cable sales.
I go there for a lot of other reasons, too.
Oh, okay, it's not just their cables. Okay.
Fun place to be.
All right, let's move on to ministry resource.
I came across a really interesting article, Martin. I had to try it out a few different ways, but it's titled How to Add Closed Captions to a Video Call. And on a personal level, this is really appealing to me because my mother-in-law is hearing impaired, and she shies away from being part of maybe a Google Meet call that we're doing as a family. It almost depresses her to be part of that when she can't hear what we're saying and laughing about or whatever. And what I found is almost all of the major video conferencing tools have the ability to turn on captioning as part of the tool. So this article covers how to do subtitles in Skype, Google Meet's captioning, as well as Microsoft Teams captioning capabilities. And like I said, I tried out a couple of these and they seem to work really well and really easily. The one that is a stickler, at least right now, and I would guess they're working on this, is Zoom. And with Zoom, basically you can say that you're going to close caption, but it amounts to someone who has the ability to type it out right as you're going. So right, there's no voice recognition in it doing it for you. And obviously the others have that capability. There's some trade-off there. They aren't perfect.
Right.
But
I'll get you close.
Google's been doing it for a long time for their YouTube videos and things like that. So, I mean, I think they've got some pretty good AI involved that recognizes that voice and turns it into text. And just a nice feature, even if you don't have someone that you know of that's hearing impaired in your meetings, it might be beneficial to someone unbeknownst to you. So why not turn it on and make use of it, since these software options do allow that. So check out the article and give it a try.
Yeah, that's not a bad thought, especially if you're doing like online Bible study or whatever. Does it, is there a running history so you can actually scroll back through time and see what was said previously?
It depends on the tool. Yeah, it depends on the tool. Skype is actually the best. It'll even save your transcript, basically. Mm-hmm. But others like Teams, it shows you two little lines at the bottom and that's all you get. And it goes by pretty fast. So it just depends on the tool. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure they'll all get better at it. Every day you see them getting better because more and more people are using them.
Skype also does translation. And I don't know if Teams does as well. I thought I saw them have that on their radar. So that might be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. All right, Sally. Community feedback. We have a segment of the show each and every time we do this where we share thoughts from our listeners. And we heard from Dave Steinke, who is the president and acting treasurer, he puts in his signature, of Cross of Christ in Universal City, Texas. And he is on a search for church management software, and he'd like to find something that kind of rolls it all into one. So you've got online giving, website, payroll, offering tracking, membership tracking, et cetera, et cetera. And so he reached out to us to find out if there was something that we were aware of that accomplished all those, and talked about some things that he had found, Aplos and Fellowship One. And those are the big boys and can be very expensive. And they still don't actually do all the things that he is really looking for. So he was kind of reaching out to us to determine if there was something that we were aware of. And fortunately, there's not. I think the solution that we normally recommend to people looking for church management software, at least, is from our friends at Concordia Technology Solutions, Church 360. See for me to say. And very good product, online, web-based. They have different modules. They have a finance module as well, though I haven't looked at that lately. I know there were some challenges with it when our church kind of kicked the tires on it, but I'm sure it's getting better each and every year, and a decent price as well. But that's not an all-in-one solution either. So there are plenty of options out there. And if our listeners have some feedback for Dave or for us, things that you've found that kind of meet this requirement, let us know. Give us a shout.
Definitely. It's a great thing to have an efficient church office. And obviously having the right pieces of software are key to that. So, and there's just so many different angles to consider. So it's hard. A hard question, but I'm sure there's some great tools out there. So, all right. We also heard from Pastor Rob Gunther. Pastor Gunther serves at St. John Lutheran Church in New Ulm, Minnesota, and he is a friend of tech. That's what I call Pastor Gunther. And lately, his tech explorations have led him into virtual reality and 3D video, things like that. And most recently, I guess just this week, just yesterday, it was in the newspaper in New Ulm about St. Paul's students touring the Holy Land with virtual reality gear. So he actually took his VR headset to his catechism class last week, and he brought up the Holy Land, and the students were able to go to, I want to say, the Church of the Annunciation, where the angel Gabriel mm-hmm. is believed to have appeared to Mary. And one student wearing the headset, the others watching as they explored the church on a video screen. And some of the, you know, they were able to walk around and see these spots and explore them as if they were there in person. And Pastor Gunther sees, lots of options for this type of technology in ministry. And so it's an interesting read, some great coverage in the New Ulm Journal, and something maybe you want to look into or reach out to Pastor Gunther to learn more about. So check out the article.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Rob. Really appreciate it. And thanks for your question, Dave. If you would like to contribute to our community feedback segment, it's very easy to do that. Just go to our show notes page, which has all the stuff, wellstech.wells.net. You can leave a voicemail there. There's links to our social media presences. You can comment on a particular show by leaving a comment on the show. Or just send us a good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net will get to us. And if you want to remain anonymous, let us know. If you don't, then we'll mention you, and we'll talk about your stuff. So please share.
And if you aren't subscribed yet, you can use our brand new subscription service that's at wellstech.wells.net. Check it out in the right sidebar there, and you'll get an email anytime a new show is released.
Excellent. Nice mm-hmm. catch. Wells Now is our last segment, Sally. So what's going on in the world of Wells?
Once again, a pastor friend in the news, an article this time in Forward in Christ magazine, the December issue, has an article called Creating Digital Side Doors. And that might sound familiar to longtime Wells Tech listeners, because we've talked to Pastor Peter Hagen.
Not too long time listeners, yes.
That's right, about this very recently, actually. And Pastor Hagen is running a podcast called Raised with Jesus. He's at Redeemer in Malmy, Ohio. And he has a lot of great ideas to share around the topic of podcasting. And just it's just a good general article to kind of introduce you to the concept of podcasting if you haven't been a podcast listener in the past. Of course, all our Wells Tech listeners are. So, but just rejoice with us that it's getting more coverage and hopefully helping more people in their walk with Jesus and in their ministry efforts. So good article, Forward in Christ. Also want to make mention, we have a little video to share in our Wells Now segment. That is the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary Christmas concert. Happened this past Sunday. They live streamed it, and we have an archive of that video. If you weren't able to watch or attend in person, you can enjoy the Christmas concert via that archive video. So check it out.
Excellent. They were able to do that. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Always a highlight of the Christmas season. Well, that's going to about do it, Sally. Thank you for all that you've done for the show, keeping the show notes nice and tidy and useful. Appreciate that very much. Coming up next time, we are going to kick 2020 to the curb and actually take a look back at all the things that kind of were memorable in one way or another. We do kind of a top something list. We kind of make it up as we go, but we're going to look at 2020 in review and share with you some of our highlights for 2020 from the Wells Tech podcast.
Prediction, top five COVID discussions.
Yeah, that's that way to tease it. Everybody will be excited about
yeah.
that one. Yeah.
No, yes. It's been quite the year.
Yes, it has. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a blessed Christmas if we don't get a chance to visit your podcast player of choice before then. See you soon. Bye-bye.